normally would be Mego and Shime. Today, though, we enter the Lion's Den as John Lyons joins me on this another rainy Saturday here in the city of Boston. Lyons, what's going on, bud? It's been a minute.
You know what, Shime? It's great to be back with you. And I guess we had one nice Saturday last week, yep. So eight more rainy ones.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's like Groundhog Day.
Yesterday, you know, though, was gorgeous. I don't know.
Especially if you're doing a road show yesterday.
In Gloucester, right? It was like the most perfect day to be out and about yesterday. It was awesome. Shout out to everybody who showed up to the Greg Hill road show in Gloucester yesterday morning. We had a blast. And the pregame on Thursday night at my place by the sea in Rockport, that was awesome. Mike Milbury's sister, Kathy, put on quite the show for all of us. It was tremendous. The food was phenomenal. If you haven't been out there, Lyons, I highly recommend it.
I have not. All I know about Gloucester is the perfect storm.
Yeah,
so that's really all I know.
Eamon was all excited. He's like, before I leave, I'm going to go to the bar from the perfect storm just to have a drink. And we passed it on our way from the Beauport to my place by the sea in Rockport. So I hope Eamon got over there and got himself a beer. But we got so much to talk about today. For the final Saturday in June, we have way more on the table than I ever would have expected. Ken's coming at me about Drake May, so we'll get to that eventually. The Red Sox have now lost six in a row as they lost to the Toronto Blue Jays last night, 9-0. We'll get to the Red Sox today. We'll even mix in a little bit of Celtics as well, having traded both Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis and then acquired a couple players in the draft. We'll hit on that. But first, we're going to start. Shockingly, we're going to start with a little hockey real quick.
Yeah. On June 28th, we're going to start with the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, we want to get this out of the way. Kind of the news from last night, the Boston Bruins, with the 7th overall pick in the NHL draft, selected James Hagans, lefty centerman for the BC Eagles. I know Jacob's excited about that. This kid, I'll be honest, when I heard about the pick, I was half asleep. And I was like, you even text me. He's like, yeah, we can talk about this tomorrow. I was like, all right, yeah, that's fine, whatever. I'm going to go to bed. And I went to sleep. I woke up this morning at about 8 o'clock this morning, and I actually started reading and checking up on James Hagans. And this kid's, like, really good.
The Bruins actually drafted a good player, Shime. I mean, what's going on?
Well, they pulled.
It's first time since McAvoy, maybe? They drafted an actual good player, although I do kind of like Mason Lowry.
It seems like it, and similar to where they were with McAvoy and even back with Pasternak, like, they kind of just sat and waited, let the draft fall to them, and then just took the best player available. And, I mean, if it works out like Pasternak and McAvoy, then you have yourself a really good NHL player. He's a little bit on the smaller side. He's only 5'11", about $177. But with another year either at BC or in the farm system or whatever, you can bulk him up a little bit, get him ready to go. But this is an offensive centerman and a position the Bruins desperately need. Milbury said it on our show yesterday on the Greg Hill show. Like, the Bruins direly need centerman, and this guy fits the bill.
They've needed to draft a good center, Shime, for about the last 10 years. Like, even going back to when Bergeron and Krejci were here when they were getting into their mid-30s, and they just never have. I mean, there was that one-month span at the beginning of last season where we thought Matt Patra might be that next guy. Who knows? Maybe he could be a good second or third-line center in the future, but that's maybe.
Yeah,
right? And
to
so
be seen.
A guy like Hagans, to me, I think he's going to have another year at BC, but when that BC season ends, I think he's going to be up with the Bruins pretty quickly after the end of that BC season. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to be 18-year-old Patrice Bergeron in 2003, but I think he's going to be a guy that's going to get up here pretty quickly. He's going to start playing pretty quickly. And one thing that impresses me about Hagans, and I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say I'm an expert on everything James Hagans, but one thing that does impress me about his games, the World Juniors this year.
Dude.
5 goals and 4 assists. And again, high level of competition. I think that's something that whenever you're looking at a draft, whether it's the NBA draft, the NFL draft, the NHL draft, can you pick out how they performed against high level competition, right? Like, how did Will Campbell perform against other great SEC pass rushers, right? How did, you know, Hugo Gonzalez perform against good European players for the Celtics? Mm-hmm. So how did James Hagans perform against, at his age level, the other best players in the world? And he was really good in those World Juniors.
Yeah, this is a guy who has been somewhere between a point to a point and a half per game player.
Yeah.
A couple stats for
37 points in 37 games this year.
He set a new scoring record at the 2024 World U18 Championships with 22 points in just 7 games, breaking the previous record set by Nikita Kucherov. Pretty good player.
Pretty good.
In 23-24, he racked up 102 points in only 58 games. That's nearly 2 points a game. With the U.S. 18 National Development Program, he had a higher scoring total than the likes of Ryan Leonard, Phil Kessel, Matthew Tkachuk during their respective U18 campaigns. The only players in that program to equal or surpass his scoring title in a single season were Patrick Kane, Cole Eiserman, Clayton Keller, Jack Hughes, Austin Matthews, Will Smith, and Gabe Peralt.
Yeah, like, pretty good.
That's a pretty good list to be a part of. And so, like, this kid is really, really talented. Again, you know, I understand he at his level, he was a point to a point and a half per game. You can't expect that to translate right to the NHL right away. This is not, you know, Connor McDavid level player entering the NHL, or even Patrice Bergeron at 18 going to join the big club. But again, with another year under his belt, whether in some form of development, I think you're right. I think by the end of BC's season or wherever he chooses to be, like, he could be on the Bruins roster as they gear up for the end of the season, just like McAvoy was when he finished at BU.
Yeah, and I think, too, it touches on a larger discussion about the Bruins front office. And how many years, Shyman, you're a big Bruins guy, I'm a Bruins guy, have we sat in these chairs or wherever we've been and said, man, they cannot bring in any good young players. And it's one of the reasons that they've spent all this money in free agency. And look, I'm glad they spend money, but one of the reasons that you sign an Elias Lindholm is that you have no one to replace Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci in your system. And when I went back and looked, because you remember the press conference the front office and ownership had, I think it was mid-April, where they got really defensive about their drafting and all that stuff, and they talked about their coaching search. If you go back and look at when the Bruins were actually good, so think 2011 when they won the cup, and that group, that 2011 team, Shyam, had seven guys aged 25 or younger that legitimately contributed to that team. Eight if you count Tuukka Rask as backup goalie. But those seven guys I'm talking about, names like Bergeron, Lucic, Marchand, Krejci, McQuaid, like those type of guys. And I look at the Bruins system right now, do I see any guys under the 25 or younger that I think can legitimately contribute to a cup team? Like, I maybe Mason Lowry long term, maybe Swayman could be that guy long term. So, but I'm hoping Hagans is the first step in a guy, you know, young guy that actually can contribute to a great team.
Yeah, and I think Don Sweeney and Cam Neely have been kind of wrongly criticized. Everybody's like, well, they can't draft, they suck at drafting. To be fair, they haven't had many high first round draft picks to hit on. And even in hockey drafts, like when you get to the second round, everybody's a crapshoot from the second to the seventh round. It's just like in the NFL draft sometimes. Like, a lot of those mid to late round picks are just, you're just throwing darts at a dartboard and hoping somebody hits. And so they haven't had a lot of opportunities high in the first round, but when they have, they've come away with pretty good players overall. Everybody points to that.
I believe McAvoy's their highest pick they've made, right? The middle of the first round.
I think that's correct.
Right,
yeah.
Because I know that 2015 draft, obviously those three picks were in the middle.
Yeah, but that was Don Sweeney's first draft ever as a GM. But you still came away with
really
Jake DeBrusk, who was a player who contributed on your top line for quite a while. No, he wasn't that good.
He was not bad. He was good.
Yeah, he was on teams that went to the Stanley Cup. And so the other two picks didn't work out at all. Yeah. And I get that, but that's been, 12 years or 10 years now removed? I think what Don Sweeney and Cam
Neely... But that goes to my other point, is how many guys on this team, Shyam, are age 25 or younger that you look at and say, that's a really good young player? I can't... Like, again, I like Lowry, but we don't know that for sure. Swayman has shown 1 year of potential and 1 year of being a bad goalie. So, like, I understand your point about... They traded a first-round pick for Tyler Bertuzzi, right? They traded a first-round pick, another one, right, in that Orlov-Hathaway deal, I think. Like, so they've traded some of these. I get that, but they don't have any good young players, like really high-end young players. And that, to me, is a major problem.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm hoping Hagans, this will be kind of a turnaround.
But look at the Florida Panthers. Like, that team had, like, two homegrown players on their dynasty championship team. Yeah. They've been to three straight Stanley Cups, won the last two, back-to-back. Like, that team only has two, maybe three homegrown, drafted and raised through the system players. Everybody else was acquired through trades, and if there's one thing
But even
I
those
think,
trades, they used homegrown players or picks they had to bring those guys in.
Sure, but
like,
not,
the Bruins don't have that.
But not all those guys... have ended up being like great NHL players elsewhere, right? Like, they're just prospects that the Bruins have, and they have prospects. Whether you think they're good or not, you tell me. But when you look at it, the thing that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely have done well over their tenure in charge of this operation is make great trades, especially at the deadline.
At the deadline,
they have Don Sweeney has made exceptionally good trades at the deadline multiple times. So, in theory, if you can add a young player here or there in this year's draft and next year's draft, if you can get two good young players to add to that core of McAvoy, Pasternak, Swayman, maybe Lowry if he pans out, and then also swing a couple of trades, like, you're right back in the playoffs in 26-27.
Yeah, and I think they're a team that I wouldn't put pushing for, like, the final playoff spot outside of the realm of possibility this year, just in that you would expect Swayman would be better than he was last year, right?
Yeah.
And you still
especially after you saw him for Team USA.
Right. And you still have Pasternak. You have McAvoy returning from injury. So you would expect that they would be a little bit better than they were last year. So, and who knows? Maybe Lindholm will be better than he was last year. But I agree with you. I think it's more about 2 years from now for them to be maybe pretty good again, and probably 3 years from now for them to be really good once again. But that, again, comes down to they have to get not just these draft picks like last night, but their whole development system. Mm-hmm. They have to get that right, because just think, I mean, Lowry, again, I like him, but I don't know if he's really that good. Matt Patras flashed. I mean, okay, so do you like Fraser Minton coming in as a deadline guy? I do, as last year, but it's so dry there in their young developmental pool that they have to get these picks right. And it starts with last night, but they have to get these right, because I agree with you in the extent that they're not the San Jose Sharks, that, like, they're so far away from contending that they suck. They have a top five forward in the league in Pasternak.
Yes.
They have McAvoy, who's a good player. They have Swayman, who's supposed to be a good player.
Had, like, a bad year.
They have pieces there to at least battle for a playoff spot, again, if they get some of these. And they just, up until last night, they haven't shown a lot of evidence.
Yeah, and I just look at a team that, in a league where half the league makes the playoffs, and we've seen in the NHL, 8 seeds can make the Stanley Cup. You've seen it multiple times just within the last decade or two, right? It happens all the time. The Kings are the teams that stand out the most.
I'm not going to put the Bruins in that conversation.
No, but there's an opportunity there. If Pasternak continues to be great, McAvoy gets better and even improves a little bit, and then Swayman goes back to being the Swayman we know and not last year's Swayman, like, there's a chance that you're fighting and you're capable up until the trade deadline. And if Don Sweeney can make a move like he has done in the past and make and add a couple players to this roster, like, you can be a frisky team in the playoffs. You could win a round once you get there. And that's kind of how I look at it. I look at it as you are in a rebuilding stage, a little bit more of a retooling than a full rebuild, but, like, you're right there. You're just a couple pieces away from being a competitive team.
I think the issue is, though, they're so top-heavy, where it's, again, Pasternak, top five forward in the league. I think McAvoy's a good player, but I just look around at this roster, and I see way too many question marks. Like, again, Morgan Geekie, good player.
Yep.
Like him a lot. I think he's going to be a piece. Should he be the second-best forward you have behind Pasternak, though? Because right now it feels like he's the second-best forward you have behind Pasternak. Like, that, to me, that's why I talk about, like, this dearth of good young players that they have. This is the reason that you gave Zadorov $7 million a year, and he's been terrible for
it.
But, like, the reason you do that is because outside of McAvoy and Carlo, you had a lot of question marks on like, that's the problem there.
Yeah.
And then, or, you know, the Tyler Bertuzzi trade, not to go all the way back, but you trade a first-round pick for that guy, and then you don't re-sign him. And I know he wasn't that good in Toronto, but it's like, so then you kind of walk away with just 2 months for that first-round pick. Like, that's the issue I think they've run, and that's one of the reasons they were one of the worst teams in the league last year.
617-779-7937. Wanted to start off on a little bit more of a positive note today, because what we're going to get to next is
not great.
I would define it worse than not great, John. Probably terrible. The Red Sox have lost 6 in a row. They lost to the Toronto Blue Jays last night, a whopping 9-0. That was a lot of fun. They get the Toronto Blue Jays again this afternoon, 4:10 first pitch right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. But Jacob is going to tell you all about that and what is going on in the world of sports right now as we get to trending. Shining Lions here on a rainy Saturday in the city of Boston. Yet another one. What is this, 14 out of 15 Lions, rainy Saturdays?
So this is going to be embarrassing from my memory, but last Saturday it was sunny, right?
Yes, correct.
And it was 13 before that, right? So 14 out of 15. Okay,
14 out of 15 rainy Saturdays. Gotta love that. That's a lot of fun. But I hope you're out driving around, going, doing whatever you're doing on this final weekend in June, hanging out with Lions and me. We appreciate it. And it's time to get a little negative, Lions, because the Boston Red Sox have flat out sucked for the last week or so.
Maybe the last 10 games?
Maybe.
Wink, wink.
So they
what
had,
happened 10 games ago?
You know? So they had a good start post-Devers trade. The Red Sox traded Rafael Devers to the San Francisco Giants and were, what, 3-1 right after that? Since
they
then...
took 2 out of 3 from Seattle, right? And correct. Roman Anthony had his first career home run there.
Yep. And then they beat San Francisco in the first game. And then since then, the Red Sox have struggled, losing 6 in a row, 2 to the Giants, getting swept by the Angels, and then losing the home opener last night to the Blue Jays. I don't know what's wrong with this team, because mixed in there, you get great pitching performances from the likes of Garrett Crochet, who goes 7 scoreless and strikes out 10, and you still can't get a win. This offense has been non-existent, and I was listening to Ken and Curtis on the way in, and the point was made, like, last night's lineup, coming from an off day into last night's lineup, you had Toro in there. You had David Hamilton, Connor Wong, Nick Sogard. It looked like a Worcester lineup for the Boston Red Sox last night against the Toronto Blue Jays.
Don't look now, by the way, but Garrett Crochet, 3rd in the MLB in ERA. So you have a guy in your
pitching
staff.
He has a better ERA than Tarek Skubal, who's on the Detroit Tigers, who's one of the best teams in baseball.
Who won the Cy Young last year.
Yes!
So you, but I bring that up to say this. You have a guy in your pitching staff who could win the Cy Young.
Yep.
You have a guy in your lineup in Jaren Duran, who last year was the All-Star Game MVP. He's taken a big step back this year. Right. So he's taken a big step back, and now you don't have Devers. And look, I was not a big Devers supporter. He didn't hustle. He bitched and complained about the first base, third base thing. But I'll say that to that. Yeah, okay. I wasn't a big Devers supporter. He was still your best hitter, and you got nothing for your lineup in return for him.
Well, Craig Breslow will tell you, as he did on the front office report, they're really excited about the likes of Harrison when he actually makes the MLB club.
And look, Kyle Harrison, I think, could be a good pitcher. And James Tibbs could be a good hitter. 2027 we're talking
right?
that's the issue is maybe though, and to me the whole trade is going to come down to those two guys when we look back on it, but those are, I think, at the earliest time 2026 guys to contribute. So you trade your best hitter and you get nothing back for the current club form, because look, Jordan Hicks, no disrespect, he's going to be a pretty good bullpen guy and that's it. Like, that's what you're going to get out of him.
But Lions, you got $250 million.
Yeah, you got flexibility, Shy. that's going to be. And my guy Brad Stevens did say that recently. That's going to be the worst word. When you hear that from a GM or an owner, it sends shivers down my spine, because that's what we were told with Mookie Betts. That's what we were told with Bogarts. And you can pick any team, right? One of the reasons the Patriots said that they traded Chandler Jones is so they could re-sign Malcolm Butler and Dont'a Hightower, and they only re-signed one of them. So, you know, whenever...
Yeah, there was an issue with Malcolm Butler.
That, there's usually less spending coming behind it, right? So just put, but that's a side note. But you look at where the Red Sox are at. This was a team, and I'll put my hand up, it looks like I was 100% wrong. Coming into the year, I was like, wow, this team could get to the playoffs, and if things break right, they could make it to the ALCS. And I thought they would probably get to the ALCS and lose there. They wouldn't have quite enough firepower to, you know, say, play with the Yankees in an ALCS series. They're looking like, you know, a team that's going to maybe be 20th in the majors. Like, at the end,
they need
of the season,
to just hope to get, like, to 500.
Right. Like, they're below 500 right now. They've lost 6 in a row, their longest losing streak since September of 2022. And Shime, like, when you watch this team play, there's fundamental errors, there's base running errors, they can't hit with runners in scoring position. By the way, right now, their average with runners in scoring position, .237, 22nd in the majors. I actually thought it was going
to
be worse than that.
I did too, actually,
when I looked
to be
it
fair.
Up. But just on the Devers trade, in the month of May, the Red Sox hit .252. In the month of June, which has been half without Devers, they're hitting .229 as a team. 6 runs a game in the 10 games before they traded Devers. They're right around 2.5 runs a game in the 10 games since Devers left.
But to be fair, like, it's not like Rafael Devers is mashing the ball in
May,
San Francisco.
Right.
Right? Like, he got traded, and he has been very below average so far with San Francisco. So it's not like...
He did have the game-winning homer against you.
He
in
did.
That Saturday game.
That his, I think that's his one home run so far with San Francisco. But, like, you just kind of look at it and... I don't even know if you had kept him at this point, like, you would be doing much better.
I don't think you would have lost 6 in a row. Like, you would be better.
Maybe win one of those games, like that 3-2 loss to the Giants to start the series there, or the second game of the series. Maybe you, like, win that because, you know, he's not hitting a home run against you. But outside of that, or the 3-2 loss to the Angels in that sweep. But Because I think that was a loss in 10
innings.
You're
not going to win last night if you have Devers, right? Like, you know, and I know it was 3-0, what, in the seventh inning last night. So it was close for a while. But you're not going to win that game.
No.
Even if Devers is – like, my issue is – and you made a great point, Sean, that coming off an off day, you have a lineup that, like, if I was a Pittsburgh Pirates fan, I would be frustrated with,
yeah.
Right? And this speaks to a larger point of this is what they've done year after year after year. I mean, they get rid of Betts. They let Bogarts walk. They let Schwarber walk. Now they trade Devers. I mean, if you had two of those guys shine in your lineup right now, you'd feel a lot better than you do today. Like,
yeah.
That's it. Look at their pitching staff. I mentioned Crochet could be a Cy Young kid. Look at Nick Pivetta in San Diego having a great year.
Look at Nate Eovaldi.
Eovaldi's, you took the words right out of my mouth. Eovaldi's been great in Texas. What if you had one of those guys? Like, not even both. Just you had, what if this team take the exact same Red Sox lineup you had last night, Shime, and they had Eovaldi and Betts? We're talking about a team that's probably 5 or 6 games over .500.
Way better. And it's just, it's insane.
Or even
that
Pivetta
I look at,
and Schwarber.
And it's not even like they have a ton of guys out, right? Bregman's out with injury, and Meyer was out due to bereavement last night. So that's like 2 guys in your lineup, and you're still starting guys like Nick Sogard, Connor Wong, David Hamilton.
I don't know why Connor Wong is playing.
I don't understand.
Like, Narvaez should be an all-star.
He finally got his first RBI the other night, didn't he?
Yeah, his first homer of the year. It was a Christmas miracle in June. But
what, like, RBI? That's insane.
Narvaez.
In 30 games played, 73 at-bats, he has 1 RBI.
Well, and this is my issue, Shime, is on Wednesday you play a day game, you have an off day Thursday, and your all-star catcher Narvaez is not in the line. Like, am I missing something? Did he get hurt and I don't know about it? Like, why? Like, I don't understand that.
I don't either. You can't even explain it to me and make it make sense. 617-779-7937. Bob in Warwick wants to talk about the Sox. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, first of all, I hate the Red Sox. Oh. I'm very happy that John Henry can't see the light or Breslow and get rid of Cora. Cora's no good. He never should have got a 3-year contract. Henry was stupid to do that. And they're going nowhere.
Thanks for the call, Bob. He has called the Greg Hill Show 2 days in a row, the exact same starting line. I hate the Red Sox. I've always hated the Red Sox.
He's a Yankee fan.
No. That's the thing. He clarified to us. He's not even necessarily a Yankee fan. He's a fan of anybody who beats the Red Sox. So, you know.
It's an interesting existence to have. But
yeah.
The Cora question is interesting to me because when you go, like, this time last year, okay, this was before June of last year, he had not signed the extension yet. And I was thinking at that time, well, if I was Cora, I would not sign an extension because the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Orioles, the Padres, like, one of the Phillies, only one of those teams can win the World Series, which means 4 of them were going to be disappointed, which, of course, Dodgers won. So Yankees, Phillies, Padres, Orioles all were disappointed after last year. I thought if Cora had been a free agent, maybe one of those teams would have fired their manager and gone for him. Instead, Cora chooses to stay, and you look at the timeline, Sean. So Cora chooses to stay. They sign him. Then they trade for Crochet. They miss out on Soto. They do sign Bregman. So you're looking at it, and you're saying, okay, they invested in the manager. They invested in the front of the rotation and a little bit in the lineup, but then they didn't take that next step. And what I mean by that is they went into the last 2 offseasons, Sean, needing 2 starting pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
So they get 1. But then they don't get the next guy. They go after Soto, and they get Bregman. But to me, if you're going to go after Soto, part of it is, yeah, he's a generational talent in his mid-20s, future Hall of Famer. But it's also a signal that you want to seriously upgrade your lineup. So you would figure you would need more than just Bregman.
And so that's the point, though, that I think matters the most, right? When you add Crochet, I felt like, at least to start the season, before the season, I was like, oh, this pitching staff's going to be really, really good. Because you expected Tanner Houck to kind of duplicate what he did last year, just like with Jarren Duran. He did not. He went on the IL. He's been rehabbing now.
Bueller's
in Worcester.
Been terrible.
Bueller has been horrendous. Like, Giolito has had moments, though, where he's been really good. And you hope that you can get that to become more consistent. And then Brian Bello has shown improvements over the last couple months. So, like, I wasn't entering the season, I wasn't as concerned about the starting pitching staff, knowing you acquired Crochet, and he has been better than advertised. Whereas with the lineup, you added Bregman, which was great. Everybody wanted you to add Bregman, but you still felt like you were missing a little something. And then on top of that, you trade Rafael Devers, who was one of your best bats in the lineup. Jarren Duran, who was top 5 in WAR last year,
led the MLB in doubles and triples last year,
has been not horrendous, but has been way, way below his average.
Casas got hurt.
Casas is out for the year, and even prior to getting hurt, has having a terrible year. And so you just kind of look at it and go, all of those pieces you were expecting to take another step forward actually took three steps back, and then, like, Bregman was really good and then got hurt. And so this team has just been an utter disaster, and there was no fallback plan.
And Trevor Story's been terrible at the plate. Now, he's been okay defensive, but at the plate, he's been terrible.
He's been better of late, but overall, you're right. He has been terrible, and there's no depth. Like, and then they tell you, oh, we're trying to time this right with Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony and bring them up without a lot of pressure. And this is a whole other thing, because they start Christian Campbell on the opening day roster because he played ball on a contract.
And because Driveline.
Because the computer spit it out that he would be the
best
in the lineup.
Meyer had a much better spring.
Well, so that's my thing, is Craig Breslow's utilizing the computer to tell him what the best, the most optimal lineup would be, but he's leaving out key pieces of information when inserting everything into the computer. Because if you cannot sit there and tell me with a straight face that if you put Marcelo Meyer into the equation, the computer's not going to spit out him starting at second over Christian Campbell on opening day. You can't tell me that. And so then that means that not only are you not giving the computer the entire information, the one thing you're relying on being the computer, you're also playing stupid games with these prospects for not playing ball on a contract. Christian Campbell plays ball on a contract, so he gets the opportunity to play on a big league squad, even though Marcelo Meyer is far more qualified to do so.
Rafaela last year, too, right?
Correct.
He played
Same
ball on
thing.
A contract. Yep. And I like Rafaela, but I think it lends to the point you're making. And, you look at where this organization is at, and again, like, they finally take some steps forward where they trade for Crochet and extend him. They trade for Bregman. I didn't even mention they signed Chapman. Signed Bregman.
He's
they
been the,
signed
one
Chapman.
Of the best signings they had.
But it's like they take step one, and then they didn't take step two. Because you look at the last two off seasons. Think about all the great pitchers, Scheim, that were available the last two offs. Crochet was one of them, and he's been terrific.
Was Lugo available at one time,
Seth
too?
Seth Lugo signed for $45 million over 3 years, 2 years ago. But there was Yamamoto. There was Sasaki. Mm-hmm. There was Corbin Burns, who moved twice in the last 2 years. Max Fried. And you got none of those. You got Crochet, but you got none of the others. And I just look at this team and say, so basically you're relying on Crochet to win you a game every 5 days, but then what are you doing the other four?
But even when he comes out with 7 scoreless and 10 Ks, they still can't win.
Yeah.
Like, because they can't score runs.
Yeah.
They
and
can't
and
even
that's
manufacture
the crazy part,
runs.
Is like this, they're sixth in the league in quality starts this year by pitchers, which is something that 2 years ago, that I think they were like 25th. Last year, they were middle of the pack. They weren't that good. This year, they've actually gotten overall, as much as we've been critical, on the whole, pretty good starting pitching, especially in June. But they're averaging 3 runs a game, below 3 runs a game since Devers got traded. Their offense, even those numbers, Scheim, their offensive numbers for the year have been kind of skewed.
Yep.
Because remember, they had the 18-run game against St. Louis mm-hmm. early in the year. They had a 19-run game against Baltimore. So you look at it and you're like, oh, they're 10th in the league in runs. Well, it's like, okay, so they had 2 games where they scored 37 runs total out of 381.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, are they really the 10th best offense?
I wonder where they are. If you take 30 runs out of that, I wonder where they
fall
to.
Right, if they're at 350, they're much like they're middle of the pack to, you know, second, third, or whatever you want to call it. But, like, that's the issue. And they're not getting any timely hitting. And this is something, and I give him credit, Lou Maloney's been talking about this for like 3 years, and he's been right, is there's a lot of teams in Major League Baseball, the Red Sox included, that don't actually play baseball well.
Yeah.
And like, they don't run the bases well. They don't hit with runners in scoring position.
They don't play defense well.
They don't play defense well. And even pitching-wise, they don't get those timely strikeouts that you need. They walk too many guys. Like, again,
outside of Chapman, the bullpen has been super hit or miss. Like, one night they'll be phenomenal. The next night they'll suck.
Yeah, and we're talking about a team, again, tied last in errors. 69 errors committed already, and we're at June 28th. Was it 229 average in June, 237 with runners in scoring position. Their bullpen ERA is 10th, but again, it's been hit or miss. Do you have the nights
Chapman's
where they'll shut
awesome.
People
That's
down?
Probably bringing that
right.
number down a lot.
Exactly. So, like, that has been the issue, is where they took this first step in the offseason, they haven't taken the second step, and then they find themselves relying on Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer and guys that are great prospects and I think will be very good to great MLB players. But to rely on them to be key pieces of your offense this early is unfair to them.
Craig Breslow was like preaching to us about not wanting to put too much pressure on Roman Anthony. And then when they finally do bring him up, they stick him fourth and third in the lineup.
Oh, I was at his first game.
Like, what are we doing?
They were treating this guy like, and I was excited to be there.
Yeah, same.
They were treating this guy like he was the savior. And I'm like, this isn't what you want. Like,
this is not how you handle a prospect. Yeah. I think it was Jones and Keefe earlier in the week mentioned, like, when you brought up a guy like Dustin Pedroia, he was allowed to make mistakes because when he was struggling, you could stick him at the bottom of the lineup, put him ninth in the lineup, and be like, all right, just figure it out. And then he'd figure it out over the course of the season and get back to going. And like, it's just, they put Roman Anthony in this position where they didn't want to, Craig claims they didn't want to put this pressure on him, and yet he's been hitting third in the lineup for like 2 weeks now.
And
he's hitting 128.
And another side piece of this, too, with Meyer and Anthony specifically, is they brought those guys up in high-pressure home game situations. Because usually, and this goes back to Francona, but John Farrell as well, and early Cora, like a good prospect, a lot of times they would start them out on the road in a less-pressure situation. Roman Anthony's first game was a home game that you didn't have to win, but it was like a home game that you really wanted to win. Marcelo Meyer came up, the second half of a doubleheader? He just drove from Worcester that Saturday afternoon. So
couldn't find his keys.
Yeah, right. So like, even that speaks to, did they really follow their timeline, their plan? Like, that, to me, again, you have these commodities and these three prospects, I'll include Campbell, who are top 25 prospects who you think can be foundational pieces of your organization. Does it feel like they're handling even those guys as well as they could be?
No, it doesn't. They are doing an atrocious job at getting these guys onto the field properly and not putting them in these high-pressure situations. Let's go to David in the car who wants to talk about the Sox. Go ahead, David.
Hey, good morning, guys. So thank you for taking the call. So I don't hate the Red Sox. I actually really love the Sox.
Oh, David.
Here's my opinion why. Even if Devers was here, Devers was only hitting well when the team was ahead. Every time this team was behind in runs, Devers was not hitting. The mistake that they made was re-signing Cora. And I have a question for you guys, why I say that. How long was Francona here?
Is it 8 years, 2004 through 2011? So was that eight seasons?
Yeah, eight seasons. And when we see what he did with the team, Cora is now 7 years, or it's going to be seven, whatever he's been here now, right? 7 years he's been. I know 1 year he didn't manage. But they had an opportunity to move on, and I believe they should have, because you need somebody else to come in here. One of the things I've always found to be a problem with Cora is he tries to be a player's manager. You cannot be. It's like in business. You cannot be the worker's buddy. You're a manager. You need to manage the business. You need to manage the team and the players like they are. They are players. They're not your friends. You're not there to be their friend.
All right, David, thanks for the call. Look, I think that Alex Cora, it feels like Alex Cora has checked out. Like, it feels like the way in which he talks sometimes, he seems dejected. It doesn't feel like he has his whole heart in it the way he has in the past. I think he regrets that contract extension. I think the Red Sox regret that contract extension because I don't think him and Breslow see things the same way.
I think so I have 2 points on Cora. One is a lot of people treat him as though he's this, like, great, great manager. And can you real – and look, the 2018 Red Sox are one of the best teams in team history. I'm not taking that away from
them. Sure.
But they consistently run the bases poorly. They consistently field the ball poorly, right? They don't always handle prospects well when they first get here, right? Like, they don't hit well in key situations. At what point is that on him? Like, you know, year after year after year with different groups of players. My second point, though, and I think this is even more important, Shime, is this goes beyond Cora. Because you consistently have guys arrive in the majors that are not fully ready to be major league players. 100%. Whether it's Roman Anthony not being able to field the ball in his first game and then having to take public grounders, you know, after that. But it's guys who are not ready to be major league players because all they care about in their development system is launch angle, right? And exit velocity. So are they really spending enough time teaching Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony and Christian? So how many errors did Christian Gamble make at second base that you're like?
He stunk defensively.
But also, why was Christian Campbell even with the big league club after really 1 year of being in Worcester? And I know he had an amazing year last year once he got promoted to Worcester, But that was it.
Yep.
And like, so it, to me, it goes beyond Cora of a front office that is too into exit velocity and launch angle and other analytics, and they don't spend enough. And I'm not saying those aren't important, but they don't spend enough time actually working with these young players on how to play baseball. And remember how bad Casas was in the field when he first came up? He would either commit errors or just barely avoid them. And if you watch the Red Sox, you know exactly what I'm talking about. How about Rafaela? I feel bad for him last year where he comes up and he's going to play center field, then he's going to play right field, then they have him at shortstop for part of the year. Like, to me, that is not good management of the. And again, they've identified good prospects. They are good and talented players, but are they managing them that well? It doesn't feel that way.
No, and so I think you're right in that it goes beyond Cora, because Craig Breslow, even on our show on Thursday during the front office report, kind of took a lot of the blame off of Alex Cora and said they need to reevaluate the way in which they do things in the minor leagues. Yeah. Like, they need to reevaluate their approach, and that's it, you're absolutely right. They need to reevaluate the way in which they train these guys in just the basics, base running, fielding, all of it. Like, Marcelo Meyer was clearly way better defensively than Christian Campbell. But because Christian Campbell, like you said, had the right launch angle, was doing everything hitting-wise that they wanted to, and he played ball on a contract, they elevated him so much quickly, so much more quickly. 617-779-7937. It's Lyons and Scheim here on a rainy Saturday on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was Craig Breslow on the front office report on the Greg Hill Show every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Either Craig or Sam Kennedy joins our program, and he claims that their intent is to, quote-unquote, improve the team before the trade deadline or at the trade deadline. When I first heard that, Lyons, my initial reaction was, oh, nice, okay. So in a roundabout way, without actually saying you're buyers, he's telling us they're buyers. But I felt like Curtis yesterday morning on our show made a really good point that they felt like they improved the team when they traded Rafael Devers. And that was clearly not the case. You removed a good player from a baseball team to give yourself quote-unquote flexibility. And so now I think there's a chance that we could see a deadline that they do something similar where they remove a player and it's addition by subtraction. Our outfield was crowded. We need to make sure Roman Anthony can play every single day. So we traded Jarren Duran, for example. And to me, that becomes like the nightmare scenario, because that is just a stupid, stupid way to be running a baseball team when the AL is kind of wide open. Like, there is an opportunity there for you, and yet you're just not seizing it. You're not grabbing hold of it when your starting pitching has been as good as Garrett Crochet has. And so I'm curious your thoughts on exactly how you feel like Breslow will approach the upcoming trade deadline.
So I hope they buy, yeah. Like, honestly, but I have not seen any evidence that they will. And his point about, are they better with Devers, better off without Devers? Like, their clubhouse is probably better because he had a bad attitude, didn't want to switch positions, didn't always hustle. But their lineup is worse, yeah. And they have not replaced that production. So they're going to have to replace that production somehow. They still need another starting pitcher as well. And I just think the issue for me, Scheim, is look at the evidence of the last 5 years. In 5 years, they've really made three total significant financial investments. One is Devers, who they've already gotten rid of. Another is Crochet, and another is Bregman.
Two of which happened this year.
Right. So, and hey, two of them did happen this year, so maybe that's a good sign. But I just think when you look at the evidence over not just Breslow's tenure, but you can go to Bloom's tenure as well, they have not made significant financial investments. And I think if you look at the trade deadline, and frankly, they should be trying to make a move before the trade deadline.
Agreed.
I mean, happy Steve Pierce Day, by the way, if you celebrate. World Series MVP traded today 7 years ago. But they should be looking to do that earlier. I could see them maybe investing some prospects in a deal. But what worries me, Scheim, is I don't know if this front office would say invest in a rental like a Steve Pierce, like a guy or like a Kyle Schwarber even, who's only going to be here for a few months, because either they don't want to pay the guy high money or they don't want to invest prospects for a guy who might only be here 2 months. So that's my concern, Scheim, is that they're going to try to middle it and maybe send out some prospects, but they're going to insist on getting a guy back who's cost controlled or has multiple years left. And sure, that would be great, but you're also probably going to need a rental or two if you're really going to make a playoff push with a team that's currently under 500 right now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They if you want to make a playoff push, you are going to need rentals, that you need those mercenary guys who want to come in, have great rest of the season so that they can cash in the offseason. Unfortunately, I think you're also right in the fact that I don't know that they're going to risk that. They want guys who are cost controlled. They want guys who have longer terms. They want guys who can, they don't have to worry about trading a bunch of prospects from their quote unquote deep farm system, as Craig Breslow put it, to then leaving your organization. Like, you're just, that to them, that feels like no return. And when they plug that into the computer, I bet they don't get the result that they want.
And to me, this whole conversation we're having, Shime, is total BS. And it's a huge reflection on how the Red Sox have warped their business model and their fan expectations. And what I mean by that is, why should the Boston Red Sox be prioritizing a guy with cost control and multiple years left? Like, look at what they did with Crochet. They went and got a guy and then extended him for a lot of money. That's the type of thing the Boston Red Sox should be doing. And it's the type of thing that when they've been good under John Henry and they've won four World Series, yes, they've had homegrown players, but they've also been willing to say, we're not going to worry about the cost control aspect. We're going to sign David Price for $200 million. Or we're going to trade for Chris Sale and then give him a big extension. I know that didn't fully work, but we're going to be willing.
Like it did.
But we're going to be willing to do those things, right? We're going to be willing to go trade for Curt Schilling and then give him a big extension on top of it. Like, that's the thing. Josh Beck. And I could list off name after 100%. Name after name. And they don't always work. But when the Red Sox have been actually competitive, they've been the team that says, we're not going to worry about the cost control aspect. We're going to go and pay for the guy. They've won four World Series this century, Shime. They've been top three in payroll all four times.
Yeah, well, they're one of the biggest markets in the sport. Of course they should be in the top five in payroll every single year. They make more money than, like, anybody else. It's insane to me with how packed Fenway Park is all the time and how much money they just generate on their own, like how they are unwilling
to invest.
They're
a top five revenue team in the majors.
Yes, they should be investing on a regular basis, but instead he's too busy worrying about signing some big Liverpool asset and not
trading Sidney Crosby.
Not necessarily developing this team. And you're right. The best Red Sox teams were a combination of homegrown talent and trade acquired or signed acquisitions. And when you look at this team, they don't have that. And I bet a lot of it, too, now with Craig Breslow is, oh, yeah, the computer says that's a bad decision.
And how many times, and we've made a joke about it the last 3 years, they've been the interest kings. Oh, they're in on Juan Soto.
Of course
or,
they are. Oh, but they're lowballing all these guys.
Yeah, they're in on Corbin Burns. They're in on Yamamoto. Like, it's year after year after year where there's a big free agent or a big trade target that they're in on, and then they don't get. Up until Crochet this year, that's been the MO. And the only thing I think, Shine, that can give people any little bit of hope is that Theo Epstein is back involved in the front office, because since
he's
come back
all season, right?
Right. But since he's come back, that's when you did trade for Crochet and sign Bregman. So I'll say that. But again, like, to your point, he's been here all year and they
traded Devers. There's rumors that they might trade Duran, like,
which that would be a mistake to me too.
I agree.
Unless you're getting a frontline starter, that would be a mistake.
So I want to pose this question to you because I brought it up.
How about even, I'm sorry to cut you off, but this is another important point. How about when you trade Devers, their unwillingness to eat any money in that deal? And because, listen, they talked to the Padres, they talked to the Braves, obviously they talked to the Giants. If they had been willing to eat money, you don't think they could have maybe got Michael King or Dylan Cease from the Padres or Spencer Schwellenbach from the Braves? A good young pitcher, if they're willing to eat money. Now, it's not a guarantee, but at least if you're willing to eat money, maybe a deal like that for an actual good pitcher is on the table. Or a pitcher better than Jordan freaking Hicks.
Yeah, you may be right. But, like, my thing is I'm okay with you not wanting to eat the money if you then turn around and utilize those assets.
Right.
That's why, like, I'm kind of still in a holding pattern, I guess you'd say, with this Devers trade. I feel like locker room-wise, I was never a Devers fan. I thought he was kind of a fat lard, to be completely honest.
He's the perfect guy to be like fourth on the pecking order of leadership. You know what I mean?
Like,
of
that, he should never have to deal with any of that. Yeah. And so I was kind of fine with them dealing Rafael Devers, but with the contract part of it, I'm now kind of just waiting. I'm like, if you spend all that money and go get somebody crazy, then I'm like, okay, good. That was a great Devers trade. We resulted in this. It all worked out. But if you don't, if you just kind of sit on your hands and do nothing now between now and the deadline, that's when I'm like, okay, what the hell are we doing here?
Yeah. And
it becomes a disaster.
Unfortunately, Shime, that's been their MO, right? Yeah. Like, they trade Betts and tell us that that's part of financial.
It's the stupidest decision.
And then, but then after you trade Betts, like Bogarts leaves, Schwarber leaves, Eovaldi leaves, Pivetta, all these guys who you could have kept around with that $300 million, they're all gone. So where's the evidence that they're going to do that? And I hope you're right. I really hope they do. It's just I'm very skeptical until they actually do it.
617-779-7937. We've been negative enough about the Boston Red Sox.
Especially that 401 texter.
Yeah.
Doesn't like us so much.
Yeah, you'd call him a baseball idiot. John Lyons? I wouldn't call you a baseball idiot.
Thank
John.
You.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Wearing a Red Sox hat. You're pretty you're a pretty smart guy.
Average baseball guy. What's between an idiot and a smart guy?
Yeah, baseball.
Just a guy.
Baseball average Joe.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
Yeah, I think we're baseball average Joe.